Jason Salivan is an artist who works with information. His most current project visualizes hundreds of years of U.S. census data, but he's also interpreted real estate images, the manufacture of shoes, and high school yearbook photographs. His pieces documenting every Playboy centerfold ever received enormous attention online through weblogs and email attachments. At one point, Google results for the term Playboy ranked his site higher than Playboy.com itself.
It's pretty wild that, you know, people Googling the term Playboy come across my site constantly. It's a constant stream of traffic of people searching Playboy.
Does it bother you that that seems to have gotten more focus than your other work?
Well, it's weird because in the fine art world, which is where I actually operate, you know, sort of in normal sense, it's not sort of the most, it's not the most important piece, or it's not the most recognized piece. It's one of the, but in the sort of, you know, more mainstream, if you want to think of sort of a lot of internet traffic and a lot of internet activity as more of a mainstream populist sort of audience, it is. But it doesn't bother me because it's sort of like you can't control these things. And I have a natural sort of populist bent anyway, so that there's anything that a fine artist can get some recognition sort of in a broader context is gratifying. You know, I'm into it. I love that. I get, literally, in the last couple of years, I've gotten hundreds, you know, of requests from basically, like, kids wanting posters, you know, and you know the work is not really set up and priced in that kind of way, but it's totally gratifying and appeals to something in me.
So wait, kids who clicked on that link expecting to see naked women?
Not necessarily. Kids coming through these different blogs that have talked about the work. I mean, the I don't know how that piece sort of initially propagated itself. There was no effort on my part to
Because it was labeled every Playboy center.
Well, you know, it didn't get that high up in Google until after all the blogging. So the blogging helped reinforce, you know how Google works and sort of, you know, that page value thing. So all the blogging, it's sort of this self-feeding cycle. And so that ended up getting, you know, so I'm not sure how the piece initially sort of propagated into the blog sphere or whatever, but that it did, it was really fun. And like I said, you know, all these sort of kids, I say kids, but basically that's what I think of as, like, you know, college kids in dorms who want posters, you know, that kind of, like, it's, I call it my MC Escher problem.
The last time I saw your work linked, and this wasn't the first time I saw it, but someone had found a site that really did display every Playboy centerfold.
Right.
Like, you would click on the thumbnails and you would see the actual centerfolds. And you don't see it as you go from one centerfold to the other, but he took a representative sample from like 83, 93, and 2003.
Right.
And it is just the change in aesthetics, what has happened over time.
Absolutely.
Is startling.
Absolutely.
And disconcerting. And for, I think, a lot of people, this is a very unpleasant development where you have, like, you know, as a pretty straight guy, I look at Playboys from the 60s and 70s, and these are like real sexy women, and you look at it now, and it is this artificial, cartoonish strangeness.
It's manufactured to take advantage of sort of natural male gaze,
I guess, issues. But that gaze has been really fucked with somehow.
Right.
I mean, it's
There's
weird.
There's a crosstalk between what our gaze sort of now expects and what we're given, and we, you know, there's some sort of like back and forth between I think of the four pieces as literally you can see her turning in the 60s version of the piece. From my mind, her head is mostly hair. You see her turn to the side, and she's more in profile. And over time, she's turning toward the camera. She's filling frame a little bit more, and she's getting blown out in the center by light. You know, and so it becomes this really confrontational, or at least sort of direct. Where she's sort of demure and distant, and by she I'm talking about just the model over 40 years, and actually is rotating in space and turning and being lit differently, and, you know, and maybe her demographic is changing and things like that, and that just four images can talk to that evolution. That was intent. Like, I knew I vibed that was going
to
happen.
You've put them together in such a way that they do harken back to previous forms of expression, and that's kind of scary.
I think it's weird.
It's very weird.
I think it's weird.
I mean, it makes you
these
think
sort
that
of clinical things mirror earlier explorations that were thought of as very humanistic.
Yes, and kind of unnatural in a way. You're seeing something that isn't really there. Mm-hmm. The Playboys and the homes look like Monet. When I first saw the centerfolds, it makes me. It's not nearly as angular, but I thought of Duchamp's nude descending mm-hmm. a staircase.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Like, wow. Mm-hmm. You know, how is it that something that is, I hesitate to use the word mm-hmm. real,
right.
but we're taking these photographs that have right. been published in a pop, in a I don't know what you call Playboy, mm-hmm. popular softcore pornography, mm-hmm. I guess, and all of a sudden you're seeing things in it that maybe
it
gets
distill
back.
To distill it, I mean, this is something I haven't actually really said, but that you would take that say something like Duchamp's New Descending Staircase or early Cubism, these guys were interested in exploring multiplicity in a single image, right? Multiple perspectives, multiple time frames, something about sort of dynamic multiplicity in one sort of, you know, but painterly, with just filtered through the human head to the hand. And then I do something really clinical, really straight, sort of set up a system, run a process, and there's sort of this visual relationship between this sort of clinical version that can only be done with the help of automation tools and technologies, and the sort of earlier explorations that were done really in this highly humanistic way. It is interesting to me.
When you're arriving
visually,
at, yeah.
they visually have some relationship.
Well, it seems like you're arriving at places that are not too far removed from one another. Mm-hmm. And maybe that gets back at this sort of ubiquity of experience mm-hmm. that we're, now I feel like I'm getting way up on my high mm-hmm. horse when I'm talking about this, but it's hard not to see these parallels. And mm-hmm. and it's really interesting to see.
Yeah, I'm interested in it too.
It's exciting.
And yeah, I think it's cool. I kind of get off on it, and I don't mean to say that it's any sort of huge thing. I just think there is kind of... I think it's more than coincidental that you end up, you know, at objects that have some sort of visual relationship. They don't look alike necessarily, but they definitely sort of harken to each other, and they're 100 years apart
yeah.
or, you know, 80 years apart in time. But their intents were sort of the same, and they're just gotten to through completely sort of different mechanisms, and mine's a really contemporary mechanism, which, you know, and has a... I'm interested in pop culture and the day-to-day and all these other things that sort of filter through my experience and come through the content, but... Yeah, I'm kind of down with those sorts of relationships.
Can you tell me about this enormous installation you're working on for the U.S. Census?
Yeah, I mean, I won't go into too much detail because it's sort of really in progress, and it's not sort of my deal to talk about stuff that's totally in progress and in real depth. But it's a 40-foot wall, freestanding on its own supports, built as a curve. It's essentially a light box. There are also video, sort of more real-time video elements. It's using the census data for the U.S. population from 1790 to 2000 as source material. This information, like, has inherent formal beauty. Like, it just, if you can look at it, if you can find it, it is actually inherently lovely to have these shapes. And what I sort of found, especially with this particular sort of data set, is there's this amazing, this sort of growth explosion shape has this a natural sort of the way if you treat these things as sort of translucent planes, which is sort of how I'm treating them, these forms in space as translucent planes, you begin to get all this sort of motion and growth and explosion and things like that. And then I'm looking at this piece as it's developing. I'm like, damn, this looks a lot like a futurist painting. Or damn, this looks a lot like George O'Keefe and things like this. And I'm like, what is going on in that early sort of painterly explorations of fast motion, of dynamic motion, like the idea of the big futurist thing is the horse, and drawing the horse as a series of triangles. A horse in motion is all these series of triangles, intersecting planes. What's going on that this thing that I'm sort of diagramming that's actually this really fast moving thing in time, the explosion of a population, has some sort of like interesting graphical relationship to early explorations of dynamic motion. So I don't think those things are coincidental, just like I don't think it's really coincidental that like the Holmes pieces, people tend to think they look like Turner, you know, or they look like Monet, you know, that there is some sort of exploration of early abstraction. There's a relationship between that thing and the idea of taking 100 homes for sale or 115 homes for sale and averaging them.
You can see Jason's work at his website, salivan.com. His installation at the U.S. Census Bureau will be on display later this year. My name is Dave Elving, and you've been listening to Audible City.